High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel alright.
Welcome, Stegosauruses, Apatosauruses, Velociraptors, and, oh, how could I forget, a very special shout-out to the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Oh god, I hate myself so much for that intro. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez, and the party's at my house this evening, as always. But of course, let's discuss your homework assignments.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
And this week, you had one of the easiest homework assignments I've ever assigned you. No. Of course not. I'm not talking about John Cusack and getting him to unblock us on Twitter. He's still blocking us. Just checked. Thank you guys for not doing that assignment. No, but of course, I'm talking about watching Tammy and the T-Rex, a film, an unforgettable film journey about a teenage girl and, what, her boyfriend's brain getting put into a T-Rex and her negotiating that and hijinks ensue, whatever. It's 120 minutes and it's free on YouTube. If you didn't watch it, pause this, watch it now. It's free. They can't give this movie away. It's so awesomely bad. Anyway, Tammy and the T-Rex. So excited to talk about it. I know that's the bell, but we got more to talk about. We got more assignments, if you will. I'm going to give this assignment to you right now because big news, if you haven't heard, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, or you haven't been checking the webosphere for us, P.S. I Love Hoffman, or should I say P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, is back. Of course, that's my old show looking back at the career of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I hosted it with the Foodie Films man himself, Kyle Reinfried. The band is back together. Don't ask who's the Hall and who's the Oates. It's a touchy subject. But we're back together, and we're ready to watch some Philip Seymour Hoffman films. Now, of course, we've seen them all, and you can listen to every episode of P.S. I Love Hoffman on the Cage Club Podcast Network. That's cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Or wherever you get your podcasts. But we decided we missed the Hoffman, you know? We missed him. We want to watch these films again. And we're doing something special that we're doing it like rewatch style, where Kyle and I are sitting down, whether it's my place, his place, or I guess on random days, some neutral place. But we're sitting down, we're watching them with the microphones on. So you can, it's going to be like audio commentary. We're going to tell you when to press play. You'll press play. We'll press play. We'll watch together. You'll be in our living room for better or worse. And the best part about this new show, P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, at least in my opinion, is that you guys get to vote for what episode we do each month. The first episode is going to come out on January 1st, and the voting is already open. Go to High School Slumber Party's social media. Go to P.S. I Love Hoffman's social media, and you'll see the voting there. Vote, 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 because, you know, we want your input. We want the input of the Hoff fans. I hope some of you slumberers are Hoff fans out there. I can't wait to start that again. So excited. But today, again, we're talking about Tammy and the T-Rex. We got two great guests, two returning guests today. Carrigale O'Regan of a bunch of Cage Club Network stuff. You've heard her here on our Breakfast Club episode, as well as our Grease episode. She's from Wistful Thinking and also Cinemakers Now, which we'll chat about today. And Jenny O'Connell, who's been on, what was it, Get Over It and a Cinderella story. So I brought these two together to talk about this glorious film, Tammy and the T-Rex. So without further ado, pack your favorite jammies, tell your mother you're sleeping over Brian's, because we're about to get our party on. The song I chose to open this episode is not in the film because I couldn't get the actual soundtrack to Tammy and the T-Rex, but the song is Was Not, that's the artist, Walk the Dinosaur. Class dismissed. Boom, boom, acca-lacca, lacca, boom, 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 acca-lacca, boom, boom.
Dinosaur Boom, I guess it's called, in 1993. A lot of these weird projects came out. Like, there was one I was looking up called, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it has Whoopi Goldberg and a T-Rex called Theodore Rex.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
The future's toughest cop is Katie Coltrane.
I'm back.
And now, she's getting a new partner. His name is Teddy.
Hit me.
It's a dinosaur.
You two solved this case together.
What? What?
It's a dinosaur.
I think that's why I signed up for this movie.
You thought it was Theodore Rex?
I think I might have, yes.
I was like, wow. Okay, so that one is Whoopi Goldberg, and a T-Rex is her detective assistant or whatever. I don't know.
It's a weird one. Sounds about right.
But there was a lot of these like weirdo dinosaur projects, including this glorious, glorious film. But let's just dive in today. You both have been on the show before. So, Kara, why don't you go first by introducing yourself in our classic high school slumber party model?
Which is what? Name? High school.
Yup.
Year I graduated.
And the team name.
Right. My name is Kara Gallorigan, class of 2005, Lakeland Regional High School. Go Lancers.
Go Lancers. I love it.
Nice. I'm Jenny O'Connell, Hingham High School, class of 2008, maybe? I don't know. Time's a construction. And I guess Harborman, yeah, sports ball.
The Harborman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one
I really
of my favorite ones that we've ever had on here.
Thank you. Silly. Yeah, it really is. And for a while there, my brain just like made it semen, and I'm like, no. But it would have been great.
Thanks so much, guys, for coming on. Very interesting episode today. Considered in the like awesomely bad category to some, 1994's Tammy and the T-Rex. And Jenny, you were the first one who pointed this film out to me, like, ever. How the hell did you discover this one? And, like, when was the first time you watched it? How did Tammy and the T-Rex come into your life and then poison my life later?
By poison, I hope you mean enrich, because it is a glorious masterpiece. Honestly, I think it came about, like, from the internet, which is a beautiful and terrifying place. But, you know, this is one of the examples of beauty of, you know, when you're up at 2 a.m. reading random articles and are like, oh, what's this? Tammy and the T-Rex. And, like, I had to watch it with one of my friend James. I think it was around the time Paul Walker died. But, like, I cannot trace my steps. All I know is that it was, like, a sign from the universe just being like, watch this movie. It's amazing.
I remember the first time I saw it, it was at a birthday party of yours.
When
you screened it after The Room. Which
yes.
I thought was an interesting selection.
Interesting double feature.
Yeah, thank you.
And then I think it was earlier this year, you and I, Jenny, caught a screening of it at the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yes.
Packed house.
Yep.
I don't remember much else about that night, but packed house.
I know. Well, I think we both had alcoholic milkshakes. And, like,
oh, yeah.
They maybe auctioned off some, like, VHSs or, like, other... I honestly don't remember because it's just like it was Tammy and the T-Rex and that's all
on
you
film,
need to
though.
Know. On film. I mean, on a big
the
screen.
Only copy,
yeah, because yeah, you have to stream it on YouTube. That's where you can go find it. I mean, I will say from, you know, quote from Latrice Royale that Jesus is a biscuit. Got to sop him up. That's how this movie is. You know, just sop it up. Go to YouTube. Stream it. Do it.
It is very accessible, fortunately or unfortunately.
Yes.
How about you, Kara? Since you thought maybe that this was Theodore Rex, I take it that this was your first time watching this film?
This was my first time watching it. Probably Aww. My only time. You know, life is short. I only have so much room for shit like this. And I'm glad that I saw it. But I don't need to see it again.
You say that, but like... A couple months from now, you're going to be like middle of the night, like, God, I need to see Tammy and the T-Rex.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to grow on you. It's just going to be like there in your heart. It's already carved out a little space there.
Yeah, I think it might.
So for our audience not too familiar with Tammy and the T-Rex, which I imagine is a lot of you, if you're even listening this week and not skipping it, please don't skip episodes. That makes me very sad. Anyway, I read the back of the VHS or DVD, but this is definitely VHS. This is a fun one, so here goes. What do you do when you wake up and discover you've become a Tyrannosaurus Rex? Yesterday, all Michael thought about was getting a date with Tammy. Today, he has to be careful not to flatten out the town just by walking through it. But his biggest problem is hiding his 3-ton prehistoric body from a mad scientist who wants to make him extinct. Permanently. Get set for a wild adventure with the most unlikely couple you'll ever meet, Tammy and the T-Rex.
Ooh.
Thoughts, first of all? Do you think that was accurate? Is it?
I mean, I guess, but I also feel like, I don't know, it's such a, it's not even a complex movie, but it just stirs so much, like, what the fuck that I feel like it could be a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, but this was definitely made, like, if they re-released it on VHS now, which would be glorious.
Oh my God, yes.
I think it would have a more of a tongue-in-cheek description. That would yeah. be a little too literal for me. But yeah. I do want to get into this because I did some research, and it wasn't difficult research, but I did some research, and a little background on the history of this film, just to make some sense of it. So the writer, director, and overall madman is a British guy named Stuart Raffel.
Oh, Stuart.
And he started in Hollywood as a sort of an animal trainer, but more of like a guy who rented animals for films. And I don't know, I didn't look into his ethical history, but that kind of scares me. It makes sense with a scene we're going to talk about a little bit later, but... That's how he got into directing, I guess. Anyway, he's directed classics like The Philadelphia Experiment, The Ice Pirates, and the very, very famous E.T. ripoff Mac and Me.
Whoa. Okay, that makes so much sense now. Because
yeah,
I saw Mac and Me, and I was like, yep.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I was thinking about why Mystery Science Theater 3000 has not touched this movie, and I'm like, maybe they will, but maybe they also realized that we are too cool, you know? And they're like, oh, well, you know, can't now.
Mac and Me, like Paul Rudd brought the attention to Mac and Me because like whenever he used to go on talk shows and like introduce his new movie, he used to play a clip from Mac and Me instead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a treasure. Bless him.
Oh, and my favorite of this guy's IMDb register here is Mannequin 2 on the Move, the sequel to that classic film Mannequin. So,
well, I guess I know what I'm going to be doing later tonight.
Okay, so I read this article that was linked to the Wikipedia page, and it was an interview with him from a site called Bristol Bad Film Club. This interview was from this year in May, and I'm going to read some quotes directly because I don't know how to paraphrase this because it's so awesome. But I'm going to read some quotes directly from this article when he talks about Tammy and the T-Rex. A guy came to me who owned theaters in South America and said, I have a T-Rex. It was animatronic, and it was going to a park in Texas. The eyes worked, the arms moved, the head moved. He had it for 2 weeks before it was going to be shipped to Texas, and he came to me and said, we can do a movie with it. I said, what's the story? And he said, I don't have a story, but we can start filming within a month. So I wrote the story in a week. You obviously couldn't play it as an actual monster, because it wasn't that good of an animatronic beast, and I had to work with what was available. So that's what the concept I came up with. So I wrote it, we shot it, and all the locations were within 25 minutes of my house.
A true master of, like, underachiever.
Yep. Oh my god, you know, Stuart.
Like, total slacker. Like, some guy, Stuart. I don't know, he had, like, a dinosaur, and he was like, let's make a movie, and I was like, okay, I guess. And then I, like, spent a week on a script, and then we just shot it by my house. It's fine.
Yeah. Way to go, Stuart. Like,
as someone who once paraded himself as a struggling filmmaker, I cannot believe that this guy kept getting money to make movies.
I mean, and honestly, if nothing else, this film does truly beg the question, how did this get made?
It really does. Absolutely.
Oh, man. Oh.
And this is the answer.
Yep.
I just, like, and the article is great because it, like, he talks about all his other movies and it's kind of similar to this, like, in terms of, like, yeah, I just decided to do this. Like, I don't,
upward.
All right, let's do a quick dive on this cast because it is interesting. Tammy is played by a young Denise Richards. What did you guys think of her overall performance?
Great. Love her.
Oh my
She's
God.
Beautiful.
Loved it. Just, like, genius, perfect. Sincere. Like, there are so many little, like, moments. I don't know if we're gonna be linear with this right here, but, like, her line reading of leave me alone, fantastic.
Oh yeah, I wrote that down.
Loved that. She just really, like, you believed that she was bewildered by this dinosaur. Like, you were like, yeah, this is authentic, 100%. Like, oh my God.
I didn't read a quote he said because I didn't think it was great. Essentially, he said something along the lines like, I cast Denise Richards because she's pretty, but she's not a good actress.
That's mean. I think she's
rude,
great.
Stuart. Yes.
Yeah, like... and I chose not to read that because I didn't want to put it in that. I didn't want it to distract from the other stuff I said. Like, but the Stuart guy is not a good guy.
No. He can fuck right off because I'm like Team Denise now, where I'm just like, yeah, Denise, you work those line readings and American Apparel wardrobe that you're just rocking.
We have to talk about the wardrobe.
Oh, we do.
Eventually.
Yes.
But I'll let Brian bring us to that point.
Yes.
Then let's not forget to talk about the wardrobe. If it misses, like, my outline here, someone, like, make a mental check, we'll discuss the wardrobe.
Oh, don't worry. In my notes, I have in all caps, good outfits.
Yes. Oh my God, same. I didn't go as far as nicknaming the outfits, but I made notes of outfits, and people do get sassy nicknames in this because that's how I roll. So, yeah.
So, Paul Walker, in his film debut, he was 17 as Michael / I guess the voice of the T-Rex because he becomes the T-Rex. I don't know. Rest in peace, Paul Walker.
Yeah. I mean,
hashtag too fast, too forever, but
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. No. R.I.P. But also, gotta say, this is his best role. Like,
come on. All right, we have Terry Kaiser as Dr. Wachenstein, and I know him as Bernie in Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, my God. Oh, whoa. I just wrote down that he was poor man's Bradley Whitford, but, like, way better.
No, yeah, he's his most famous role is that of a dead man.
Oh, wow, I did not recognize him.
Yeah, I didn't either. Damn.
And then there's that guy, Theo Forsett, who plays Byron. First, what did you think of Byron? And second, like, I looked up his IMDb. This is the last role he was ever in, and he like, seemingly disappears.
Yeah. That's sad.
That is sad.
But I would quit acting after this, too.
Yeah, I get that. Because, like, as... It's tricky because, like, I think that the character, like, hits on some important things in a shallow way, and I wrote down in my notes that I really just wanted the movie to be about Byron and the relationship with his father and being like, what is it like to be like a gay black student in, I guess, LA, you know, and be like, oh shit. And like the racist cops. And I'm like, Byron, like you deserve better than these two fools. But, you know, I enjoyed him. I thought he knew what he was doing. He added some, like, I don't want to say levity because it's not like this movie's like super dark.
He added levity to such a serious
movie. I don't
know.
I actually think this
movie
is extremely dark.
I mean,
it's really grim.
Yeah. True. It kind of is. I don't know. My whole grim scale's broken where I'm just like, whatever. I'm dead inside. This is hilarious. But like, he was a bit like the Gina Gershon in Showgirls where I'm like, you are enjoying yourself. Yes. But now I'm sad to know that broke him. Come back to us, Byron. We miss you.
Yeah, where's Byron? Come back. I agree. Like, okay, terrible movie, obviously, but like, I don't know. I mean, progressive character for the time. Can we give the movie credit for that? I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Like,
let's see who else I should mention. Ellen Dubin. I don't know who really she is, but she played Helga, the doctor's like.
Oh yeah.
I loved the two of them.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted the whole movie to be about, was like the mad scientist and his like weird sidekick.
I know.
And then, the one other guy I'll mention is George Pilgrim, who played the terrible human being aptly named Billy Bad.
Oh, no, that was his last name? Because
yes,
I was just like, Billy, of course. Oh, I forgot that Byron's last name is Black. And I'm like,
is it? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so now I'm like really curious what these characters' last names are, cuz like I'm like, "Oh, Michael, Tammy, of course, like straight people names. Got it." All right, you know, like what is their last names? I need to know now. Except not really, maybe.
I don't think they need them. We only need to know.
I guess not.
That Byron
maybe
is
they're
black and that Billy is bad.
Yeah, true. They're
so terrible.
Tammy is just like Madonna or Cher. It's just Tammy.
Listen, only took a week to write this. We didn't have time to think about last name. True.
That is a very good point. Jump to this opening scene, right?
It's wait. The lab assistant, Bobby, was played by the guy who played Cousin It.
Oh.
What?
Cool.
In the Addams Family movies. And
yeah, I figured.
The guy who delivered pizzas would enter the hearts and minds of America as Pedro in Napoleon Dynamite.
If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
Which I did notice and I wrote down.
Yeah.
Then I got really like confused time-wise because this is 1993. And then he plays a high school student like 12 years later or something.
Right? Good for him for like whatever skincare routine he's using. If like he kept it real high school, you know? Though
yeah.
I think like knowing this movie like seems really high school where I'm like, okay. I mean, especially Billy. Like, Billy, I just wrote, like, is Billy 40? Like, is this, like, John Ritter's midlife crisis? I'm sorry, John Ritter.
Rest
he seems
peace,
like a nice dude. R.I.P.
Don't besmirch
oh, yeah.
The name of John
yeah,
Ritter.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so first impressions are scenes is, like, Denise Richards dancing. Maybe she's a cheerleader or something.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
kind of vague.
Like, yeah.
Maybe.
It was
just
a situation.
I mean, the thing that really stood out to me for that was the music.
Go Panthers! Go! Go! Go Panthers! Hey, go!
I saw a man, your T-Rex on the loose. I'm coming out to get you. I'm gonna cook your goose. Everything is different. It's a different game. Jump into the fire. Jump into my brain. Inside my brain, sometimes I feel like I'm gonna go insane.
I just
want,
I mean, wow, I keep bringing up, like, cool dead dudes, so I'm sorry, apparently, this is how my brain is. But, like, I want someone to, like, clip together, like, pieces of Alan Rickman's voice reading these lyrics, because one of the lyrics was, like, dinosaur music inside my brain. Like, I would go to a poetry reading of someone just reading that song lyric, all of it, because it was amazing.
I need to find this song. Like, I was kind of trying to look for it, and I couldn't find it, and there was never a soundtrack released for this film, FYI, which didn't surprise anybody.
How dare they?
We meet Paul Walker and Byron relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, Kara, I have a question. As our resident plant and flower expert on the Cage Club podcast network, I noticed that Paul Walker eats a flower in one of these earlier scenes.
Oh, yeah, he eats a rose.
Okay.
It was amazing.
Will that kill him, is my question.
No, actually, roses, I think most rose species are edible by humans.
Cool.
I'm going to look it up real quick. Edible rose. Generally speaking, you wouldn't want to eat a rose because probably covered in pesticides. But
good point.
Yeah, most of them are edible. And I think you can eat rose hips too, like the kind of like berry that grows after all the petals fall off.
Gotcha. Well, I still think now for my next Tinder date, I'm going to be wearing like that crop sweatshirt and just like eat a rose and be like, yeah.
What a way to prove your love to somebody, right? Not just give them a single flower.
I feel like it's more of a screening device, not necessarily a way to prove your love to somebody.
I don't know. I'd like to think this came, like, the reaction came from Paul Walker's brain and wasn't in the script, you know? That he was just like, I'm gonna eat this flower as a response. And it's like, yeah, keep it. Keep that take.
Later, though, we see as one of the ways that the T-Rex... Oh, I can't believe I'm saying these, like, sentences. But one of the ways that the T-Rex can prove that he's indeed Paul Walker... is like he eats a flower again. So I don't know,
but either way, just what a response. and what a lead up to just like the one of the gayest fight scenes in high school. I'm just so like loved it. 100%.
Why did any of that happen?
Okay, first of all, Billy Bad is a terrible person.
Like, he is.
He shouldn't be in this school anymore. And they mention he has a restraining order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
And he's 40. And, like, what are you doing at this school?
Guy, break it up! What the hell's going on here? Billy, you know the school's got a restraining order against you. Are you that cool? That boy's going mad.
What we got here is one of them testicular standoffs.
You're not squeezing much, Michael!
What is going on here is one of them testicular standoffs. As one of the police officers referred to it as.
What the hell is this?
Right? I mean, because I didn't think it was going to go there, and then it just did.
Yeah, because they're just, like, scuffling and like, you know, all that, like, masculine energy getting out there, and then, like, let's just grab each other's balls and not let go.
Well, no, the bad guy grabs Paul Walker's balls first, and then Paul Walker decides that the only way to deal with this situation is to reciprocate, and then they're locked in a standoff of grabbing each other's balls quite hard, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the police officers finally talk them down, and it's like, you are both going to let go at the same time. So they do eventually. And the other guy crumbles to the floor, and Paul Walker's like, I have a cup on, so I'm okay.
Yeah. I also, like, not that the cops were the most competent, but, like, I feel like they've been in this situation before. Because they weren't just like, what the fuck? They're like, we got a testicular standoff, you know, just going to count to three. Like,
they seem to have a protocol.
Yeah.
And as you said, Kara, it's clear. Billy Bad does grab first, so we're not going to get, like, a Han Solo, like, who shot first situation here. So in all the lore of Tammy and the T-Rex, it was Billy Bad who grabbed the balls first. God, this movie...
I know, but I will say I did love Byron's background reactions, because I'm like, that's just like... I'm like, yep, you are the audience. Like, maybe this is what broke you. I don't know. And of course, the leave me alone, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's where we get our leave me alone.
Like, how that hasn't become a meme is, like, beyond me. I don't even know.
Somebody is burying this movie very, very hard, and I could probably guess why.
They need to stop and just bless everyone with it, you know?
We get that quick scene where we meet the T-Rex, and Bernie basically tells the audience that it's a robot, just in case anyone was confused.
I know. I mean, the realism is so confusing, so it's like, I needed that clarification.
But T-Rexes aside, I love this, again, tongue-in-cheek here, I love this next scene where, like, or whatever scene where Tammy calls Paul Walker and invites him over, and just like the acting of Paul Walker here, how excited he is to like come over her house is just astonishing to me.
I know. I feel like he just took inspiration from like a golden retriever.
I was just about to say that.
Or like secretly is a golden retriever, where I'm just like, oh my God, yes.
Little known fact, Paul Walker is actually a method actor and roamed around set pretending to be a golden retriever for months ahead of time.
We should go on IMDb and put all these like fake facts in, because there's hardly any facts.
Oh my God, please. Because like, I feel like somewhere, somehow, Daniel Day-Lewis will read that sentence and be like, I can be a golden retriever too, guys.
I was going to retire, but I realized there's still something I have yet to do.
Yep. One challenge left. So whatever. Normally I don't go scene by scene, but there's like not a lot of scenes here, so I feel like doing it.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Billy Bad gets wind that Paul Walker is at, secretly at, I suppose, Tammy's house, because like these girls see him.
Yep.
And
evil Christina Applegate, who's just there to make poor life choices. That's her whole entire role.
Pretty much. So Billy Bad shows up with literally a gang. They ring the doorbell, and the mom is like, oh, let's call the police. And Dad's like, I'll handle this. And then a full-on home invasion happens. Paul Walker sneaks out the window, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, they end up chasing him and running him down with their cars. Right. Putting him in the trunk of their car and driving him like a wildlife park, I suppose.
Yeah. Can I say, though, I feel like, I don't know if you guys watch Game of Thrones, but I feel like George R.R. Martin stole this for like that whole, you know, like dumb Stark is like running through the field and they're like, oh, like, I'm not gonna, I'm like, this is stolen from Paul Walker's choice to just veer off. Like... Yeah!
Oh,
he could have just veered off the road, like, into a yard to, like, solve every... But he just stayed on the path, like
That's a
golden
really
retriever,
point.
Where I'm just like, buddy, buddy, if you just went into a yard, like... You would have been fine.
That's fair. I mean, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. He could have just not gone on the road where cars are clearly faster than humans.
Yeah. And just, but like the, it did, if he did that, would be deprived of the most amazing murder scheme ever, you know?
Well, now, like when I read the director's background and he was like a wildlife renter to Hollywood, like now it makes sense why you would randomly write this death in. You're probably like doing a friend a favor or something.
Yeah. Or it's okay. Just his own, you know, life story that he definitely murdered someone in a wildlife sanctuary. And we need to check in on Stuart because he's gone away with shit.
Would it shock me? No. So Paul Walker doesn't get killed, but he essentially gets mauled by jungle cats. I guess, well, let's stop here. What's your opinion on this death?
I don't remember it.
You don't recall him getting mauled by a lion that we don't
actually
see?
I know that happened. I remember seeing a lion, but I don't remember the actual...
Well, I think they cut away, but it's just...
Yeah.
Like, just...
Well, definitely... Apparently, this movie was originally a lot more gory, and they had to cut a lot of the gore for a PG-13 rating.
Oh, yeah. More gory, more sexual, like...
Why would they go for an R rating on this film?
I don't know. Why would they dull it shine, you know?
Well, they weren't. That's why. That's why they had to cut that stuff.
They were just, like, surprised when they, like, submitted it. Oh, my God.
I'm surprised that was, like, the only thing the MPAA or whatever had, you know, problems with. They weren't like, excuse me, this entire premise? What is this?
That's not their job.
They're like, eh, just cut out the lion gore, you know, and like all the gore.
What happens next? Let me see. Oh.
Well, I do love that, like, again, just so many layers of stupidity of like, just, I'm like, cats can climb trees, Paul. Like lions.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can climb trees. Because it's
runs
like
away from the lion, and he climbs the tree, and there's a panther in the tree. I think.
Yeah, yeah. Because not that it's like you know, not that I'm a lion expert, you know, or anything, but I'm just like, I feel like they can climb a tree. Like, that's not really a good thing. So I like to imagine that the cats, you know, that are snarling are, like, trying to snarl sensible life advice at him. Like, being like, hey, we can climb trees. Like, you know?
Kara, do we have an African jungle cat expert on the Cage Club Podcast Network? Because
I hope
like
so.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I do know how to use the Google.
That's true.
True.
Yeah, too
late. Is the question, can lions climb trees?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I just feel like they can, or like...
Oh, I'm sure they... I'm sure.
You know?
It's somewhat uncommon for lions to actually climb trees. There are no more than two populations in the whole world of such lions that do actually climb trees as one of their day-after-day behaviors. However... they can totally fucking climb trees.
Good. Good, because I believe in them.
Also, the source on this is Quora, so...
Okay.
Take it with a grain of salt. Yeah. Lions can definitely fuck you up if you climb up a tree.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, he might have been getting tired, wasn't thinking correctly or clearly, wasn't really thinking through. Also, you know, it was a different time. I grew up spending so much time watching the Discovery Channel, you know.
Oh, yeah.
TLC, back when they, like, showed things about animals. So, like,
true.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, those zoo magazines. I don't know. Yeah, I forget what they were called.
I think it was called Zoo.
Yeah.
you know.
That would make sense.
We might have some more ambient animal knowledge than Paul Walker would in this movie.
You know what's funny? Now that, like, you bring it up, and maybe I'm thinking too deep about this. But this film kind of is a little bit of an allegory for... maybe I'm not using allegory properly. Probably not. But for how when Jurassic Park came out... I feel like kids were really, really into animals, right? For like forever. And then Jurassic Park came out. And then they got really exclusively into dinosaurs.
I don't know if that's true. Because I think part of the dinosaur boom of the early 90s was like a large contributor to that would be Land Before Time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, true. You're right.
Yeah, because that's true. Jurassic Park gets a lot of credit, but, you know, Land Before Time, that was, I guess, before.
Predates it by several
years. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the OG. I mean, honestly, Brian, I hope you were going in for, like, some sort of, like, weird Jesus allegory, and I would be like, oh, my God,
no,
tell me more.
I'm not going to go that far.
Like, about it's that time that Jesus, you know, like, got resurrected into a T-Rex body.
Or it's just a story about domestic violence and how difficult it can be to escape an abuser. And the havoc that it can wreak on your whole life.
Yep.
One could find that story in here for sure.
Definitely.
That's why I thought it was so dark.
Oh, so bad.
I know.
I wrote this down, but I don't quite remember it happening. So in the next scene, Paul Walker's in a coma in the hospital. And then Billy Bad shows up. And does he slap her?
He does, yeah.
What a terrible man.
I know. He's the worst. But I will say, I guess because I'm treating, you know, this movie the same way the movie treats domestic violence, where, like, they'll show it, but then they'll immediately just kind of, like, drop it. And you're like, whoa, okay. What? Of, like... that fringe jacket was a look, like, the fringe.
I love that jacket. Oh.
And then just, like, I love, like, that, like, Uncle Bob, first of all, just explains a lot about this film, where I'm like, ha, is this the writer insert category? Like, is this Stewart just, like, drunk the entire time? Or is Stewart truly the mad scientist? And, like, just because, like... their doctor outfits made me crack up. Like, her cutout dress, where she just has this, like, bra that's out. And they're both, like, smoking in a hospital. Yeah, and, like, the hospital's like, ah, they're doctors. I'm like, what? A hospital? Like,
yeah, just to clarify, the mad scientist guy, Bernie, and his partner, I suppose, pose as doctors. Though I think that other doctor might be in on it. I'm not sure. And then they basically pronounce Paul Walker dead. Essentially kill him.
Doctor, we have a big problem here.
Yes, let me see. Oh, stop. Yes,
His heart has stopped. Resuscitate him.
No, Michael, no!
Oh, Mama, if he wakes up now, he's going to have a heart attack for sure.
Live! 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 Well, that's it. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I did all I could.
No!
Oh, my God. The CPR thing, like, oh, my God. The live! Live! Like... dead. I'm like, I was dead at that. I was just like, dead. I'm dead. I know he's gonna be a T-Rex. Like, I'm done. Bye.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of surprise in this film. Maybe.
Yeah.
So whatever. The doctor takes his brain and then essentially in a somewhat forgettable monsterization scene puts his brain in a T-Rex. It's not a, what's it called? Again, to be clear, people, it's a robot T-Rex. It's not a real T-Rex.
Yeah. But I think that robot honestly deserves an Oscar for reacting to itself. Like, with that little dinosaur mirror. Just like...
oh, God. You know, in a quick scene after this, after the pizza guy comes, when he dials the phone.
Oh, I love that. Like,
opposable thumbs gold. A T-Rex does not have. Long arms right. A T-Rex does not have.
I know. Like, I know. But I just... I want this movie to be studied and immortalized for science. Like, I really do. I want the future to, like, look back upon this movie and be like, what the fuck, guys?
And why did the doctor do, like, a strength test with, like, a barbell? Like, when that's not what people are not afraid of T-Rex arms. In fact, T-Rex arms are, like, a joke to people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like he's kind of like Dr. Nick on The Simpsons. Like, is he really a scientist?
No, I mean...
I guess.
A robotics guy, possibly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Well, I mean, he has to have some degree of great scientific knowledge.
He did make a brain work, but it's also Paul Walker's brain, so...
Any quick thoughts on any of this that happens, or the phone dialing scene, or...
I mean, the alleyway couple was really, not... Everyone's just very nonchalant about this robot T-Rex being like, oh my god, it's a robot. I'm like, yeah, no one's questioning why it's there. Like, everyone just really commits to accepting things in this movie, and I like it.
I think Byron's dad's a little skeptical at certain points.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, but like, I appreciate it. Like, even like the old lady just like describing what was happening over the payphone, like, yeah, she was kind of, you know, but she was still like, you know, I forget what she said about like ordering something. I'm like, wow, like commit. You're still going for this. I like it.
All right. Well, if it's okay with everyone, I'm just going to jump to this party scene.
Yes, please do.
So there's a house party. Tammy goes out the night that her boyfriend died, which I think is a little bit. I mean, more power to her, I guess.
I guess it's a choice.
The T-Rex invades. I don't know really what else to say. The T-Rex comes and he's like jealous of things. Or no, I don't know, jealous. He's angry. Oh, well, I'd be angry too.
It's T-Rex revenge. I can't come up with a clever pun for that. So,
Tammy leaves because Billy Bad, surprise, surprise, being like a dick to her. Byron stays, right? Yeah, Byron stays.
Yeah.
T-Rex ends up sparing him. And that's like one of our first, besides calling a phone and picking up a mirror, one of our first signs that the T-Rex is like, you know, has some human heart to it, I suppose.
It's the heart of a champion, because it's Paul Walker. But yeah, I had a lot of thoughts on this dance party. Just so much terrible dancing, where I was like, oh my god, amazing. Yeah,
there's that one guy with the helmet.
Yeah, and like I'm like, are you in high school, sir? Like, I don't think you're in high school, sir. And like, I mean, there is Tammy's like pink turtleneck outfit with the necklaces, and where she like tells Billy she never wants to see him again, but then she looks around and she pouts at him, and I'm like, oh my god, brilliant. Love it. Like, and Byron's hat was great.
All of Byron's hats were great.
Yeah, I appreciated Byron's hat game.
Oh yeah, no, that's a good point. You're right. I didn't see it, but you guys definitely, you're bringing me to the light, the fashion in this film.
Yeah.
Interesting. On point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also love that evil Christina Applegate, she just made so many choices in this scene. Like, lots of poor life choices, as she do, but just, like, the fact that she was, like, goose towards Billy and just, like, did the, like, like bite thing at him to like try to seduce him. I'm like, yes. Also, drunk Molly Ringwald and caveman Ken, very underrated.
Who are these people?
They were the people at the bar, like, because drunk Molly Ringwald was like, oh my god, maybe it's a dinosaur, and caveman Ken's the bartender. Uh-oh. Just oh, like, yeah. Where I'm like, how'd you get that nickname? What what high schooler is known as caveman Ken? Like,
well, so whatever. The cops come, and this is where we learn the shirt.
Wait.
What? More?
Yeah. I can't remember anyone's name, but the Christina Applegate girl and the bad guy, they are having sex, and, in a car, and, like, he's on top, and you see her, like, making noises, and then she sees the T-Rex coming for them, and she starts screaming. And then the camera cuts to the dude's face, and he scream yells back, I'm good, right?
Oh, God.
And it made me laugh. Right.
I know. Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot about that.
Oh, my God.
I hate Billy Bad.
Me too. Yeah. I don't know if there's, like, a list out there for, like, the worst high school Billies, but, like, he's definitely just on top. Yeah.
He would certainly make that list. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. And because the T-Rex also crushes, like, another car with people
in it. Oh, yeah. He also, like, foot murders the dude, like, the lackey who I think is just named Weasel.
Yeah, his name's Weasel. So, and he's not Pauly Shore, so that's disappointing.
It is, yeah.
But you know what he was in?
What?
This is a little transportation back to your old podcast, P.S. I Love Hoffman. He was in Twister.
Oh, what? My God! You know, yeah. I was watching this, and I'm like, where have I seen this guy? You're right, he's in, like, the tornado chasing gang. Like, he's in Hoffman's crew. Oh, wow. Good call there. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like, where have I seen this guy's face?
Yeah. No, that's why I looked it up. Because I was like, he seems familiar.
Because, like, all those guys in the Twister, like, tornado chasing gang have, like, very distinct faces in my mind.
They do, yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, very good call.
So, as I said, the cops come. We find out Byron's dad is the sheriff. Which is cool.
That is cool. I liked that layer. I was like, all right, you know, that's where the spinoff idea came off. Like, I wanna learn about Byron, you know? Like, most interesting out of, like, the core three heroes, I think. I don't know. That's just my take.
Fair. Let's see, what else did I put in my notes? Oh, I guess the guy, like, one of their assistants got flattened at some point.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, Helga, like, licks her fingers, like, picking them up. And I'm like, that's very unsanitary. Why?
It, like, as cartoony as this film is, believe it or not, that took me out of it.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, most... Okay, it's not grounded in reality, obviously, but, like, flattened dead bodies haven't really... I don't know, they're not too common in film, so I was very, confused by the choice.
True. It was a choice. Much like all of this movie was a choice.
I suppose.
They were also just so nonchalant about just, like, flattened. Like, was it, like, the Arnold Schwarzenegger knockoff dude?
I believe so, yes. I believe so.
Who had the like, American Apparel suspender leotard. I'm pretty sure that, like, I don't know, American Apparel must have, like, when creating their line, like, looked at this movie and been like, that outfit. Let's do it.
That's fair. What else is here? Oh, yeah, the T-Rex ends up, you know, Michael as the T-Rex ends up going to Tammy's house, steals her, eats a yellow rose in front of her to tell her he's Michael. Also, he, like, plays that game of charades with her.
Oh, yeah, the charade scene. That was so great. And by great, I mean terrible, but also great because of Denise just, like, rocking that cute slip and kimono and also just being so, like, she really was trying to guess. And I'm like, proud of you.
This film really is coming down to fashion, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it serves some looks, like those slippers, you know? I don't know if we can, like, go into Tammy's funeral outfit, but favorite outfit.
What was her funeral outfit?
It was that, like, red velvet dress that, like, also had this, like, cross belt. And, like, she had this, like, hat, like, black velvet hat with a flower. God.
Yeah, sorry. I tuned out for a second. That outfit is so good.
It's so good. And she had like a 90s like choker that was like black velvet. I'm like, yes.
But that red velvet dress is like so in right now.
It really is.
It really is. Because like velvet is like the fabric of the season right now. And like the high-low skirt.
Oh, yeah.
Not super in now, but it was last year.
Oh my god, this is probably why I'm not, like, called to art direct any fashion shoots at all. But, like, if I was in charge of, like, Nasty Gal or Dolls Kill or, like, any of those, like, trendy online websites, like, I would definitely do a Tammy and the T-Rex inspired lookbook. Oh my god. Be like, this. Just recreate that outfit. Yes. And be like, yes, buy it.
Jenny, would this be on your... If you had, like, a modeling bucket list.
Oh my god, absolutely. Okay. Like, I would love to just troll the shit out of a major fashion magazine and be like, I want to do a Tammy and the T-Rex inspired shoot.
And like, they'd be like, yeah, nostalgia is like really in.
Yeah.
The kids are in these days.
You know, like that's exactly what I would do if I were like one of these like really highly, like if I was Kim Kardashian and like just had like magazines throwing themselves at me, I'd be like, oh my god, Tammy and the T-Rex, let's do it. Like, let's have some fun.
It's not at all out of the realm of possibility, as like, silly as it sounds.
Right?
Well, I feel like some sort of pop star could do a music video like that Clueless music video that...
Oh yeah, or like Ariana Grande's doing a Mean Girls. Yeah, so like... Someone's got to step up and do
so you need to start a band.
Yep.
And
then Tammy and the T-Rex.
Tammy and the T-Rex video.
Yes!
If any of you slumberers out there know a band or are in a band who'd like to do it, please credit us here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hire us.
Yes, hire us. Hire
oh my
us.
God, please do.
I guess we'll have to give Stuart a cut, but whatever.
Nah, Stuart doesn't need anything. Stuart has Mac and Me, you know. I think Stuart's good.
All those Mac and Me royalties and Mac and too. okay, I want to talk about this morgue scene because it is pretty morbid and strange.
Oh, so yeah.
So they go to the morgue to look for a body for, for I guess, Michael's brain to be taken out of the T-Rex. I don't know how she and Byron think they're going to do that, but...
Yeah.
Well, they kidnap the scientists and they're going to make them facilitate this.
Oh, right.
So they're, like, tied up and...
Oh,
and
yes, that's
like,
right.
Bound and gagged in the van that they stole.
That's a good point. Still, whatever. They're at this morgue and they're looking for bodies, and it gets very
a little uncomfortable, a little bit like I just wrote in my notes like poor Byron, like maybe this is the scene that broke him. I don't know.
Yeah. Because he's the one that has to, like, pick up all the dead bodies and, like, drag them to the window so he can hold them up. And the T-Rex can either give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on whether he wants that to be his human body.
His non-opposable thumb that he suddenly has is going up and down.
Yep.
And they even make, like, a penis joke at one point. Like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then there's, like, just, I mean, lots of interesting questions where I'm like, you would respond the way that a straight white dude would respond. So, like, kudos for that verisimilitude right there. But just, like, oh, man, yeah. Yeah, that was a scene in a film.
They end up not choosing a body because I think they see the people escaping, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and then, like, but then they escape, too, and, like, Paul Walker just flips them off as a dinosaur, and that's when I also realized that their last name was Black, where I'm like, oh my god, that movie gets a flip-off, too. Like,
Hashtag Too Fast, Too Forever. This might be Paul Walker's first on-screen, like, car chase.
It is?
It totally is.
Oh man. Oh yeah. So Byron gets like briefly arrested after this, I think, but like he returns quickly. But this is where we get our great like wide shot of the T-Rex running away with Tammy.
Oh yeah, this is absolutely what I would want to recreate, just being like iconic right here.
Oh man. So of course this brings us one of the more interesting scenes of the film, which is, I guess, you know, they run away together in the barn, the T-Rex and Tammy. And, you know, it cuts to the next morning, really, when Byron comes in and asks, like, are you guys decent?
Yeah.
An interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah, this line, well, just many things about this premise just make me, like, I've just seen so many, like, memes about, like, you know, like, how, like, conservatives will sometimes be like, oh, like, gay people are corrupting the children, but then you have, like, B-movie.
This is the future liberals want.
Like, this is the future liberals want, yes. But also just, like, I'm like, straight people, what's wrong with you? Like, you have B-movie, Shrek, and then this, like, oh my god.
Like,
B-movie.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, also, I'm not surprised, because this is Tammy and the T-Rex, so I'm like, oh, okay. This would be a choice that Stewart would make, you know, after... I think this is, like, my fourth time seeing this movie,
wow.
So I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, is it a rumor, or is it just, like, a fake internet rumor that there was more of an intimate scene cut from this? I mean, I don't know if anyone knows, but that's something that I've seen on, like, message boards, and apparently it got a little bit more racy then.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know that Gillian Anderson is not Scully, but I would like her to put on her red wig and figure this out, you know, just for everyone. Like, really dig in there, Scully.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch that, too. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
But given how the film ends, like the final scene in the movie, I would not be surprised if there was an earlier scene that was a little more sexual.
Yeah, is it bad that I almost, like, don't care about the discovery scene just because, like, that ending is, like...
That ending.
Oh, my God, that ending.
So let's get to it, because there's not much left. What happened? I don't even remember.
I have no idea.
Like, they shoot the T-Rex, and, like, but somehow survives.
They shoot the T-Rex, and Denise Richards is so upset.
So upset.
On the fire! On the fire!
My God! Oh, my God.
Good shooting, Norval. Thank you, Ned.
Michael! Michael, can you hear me? Michael, I love you. No!
All of the tears. Meryl Streep is clutching her Oscar, being like, you ain't getting this. Like,
does the T-Rex eat the professor or the mad scientist, whatever he is?
I think he does.
I'm assuming he does.
Yeah. They didn't, like, show it, but they, like, have him, like, with, like, flesh hanging out, being like, I'm a T-Rex, I just ate poor man's Bradley Whitford. Or, you know, like, Weekend at Bernie's, he's dead now, bitch. Like, again, that's the reaction, you know?
I just wrote Denise Richards is upset, and then I wrote the ending part. So let's just get to the ending.
Okay, yeah, let's get to the ending. That's...
So, T-Rex is dead, and we don't know, really know what happens. It just cuts to Denise Richards... strip teasing Paul Walker's brain.
No.
Well, okay.
She gets home.
Yeah.
She gets out of the car. She sees her mother and father. She's like, hi, mommy. Hi, daddy. And she's looking very happy.
I love the Denise Richards impression. Continue.
Thank you. And she goes upstairs, and even her parents are like, it's weird that she's so happy after her boyfriend just died. And then we get to her bedroom, and... You can take it from there.
No, all I was going to say is, like, it's...
Can I take it from here? Because, like...
Please do. I don't even want to. Please do.
Yeah. I mean, because I think this is a scene that, like, truly broke my brain, but also, I guess, shows my endurance, so congrats. But, like, just, like, she's, like, wearing, you know, like, kind of, like, almost like a sexy schoolgirl outfit, but not really. But then she changes.
But it's all... Oh, yeah. And then she's in all white.
Yeah, she has this, like, long, like,
very sexy angel
boa, and, like, these gloves and bracelets and thigh. Like, she coordinated in, like, less than a minute, where I'm like, girl. Like, tell me your secrets.
But she's probably just had like... that planned beforehand.
Yeah, no.
What we didn't see is the scene from the night before where she was trying all the different looks on.
True.
They had to cut
yeah.
that for time.
Yeah, they did. they couldn't show that process. But the fact that she had this planned and, like, ready to go and just, like, was doing this, like, weird striptease for the camera, like, just breaking that fourth wall. And then there's, like, Paul Walker's brain, like, short-circuiting and, like... It's like vaguely.
Also, she pours alcohol on it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, want a little action?
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting all day.
I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't be long. I hate being on my own.
You're so naughty, you drive me crazy.
Show it to me, baby!
You're bad!
Woo! Oh, baby, now watch
you! I'm gonna have you.
Oh my God,
I know.
Yeah.
So she like gets his brain drunk and then does a strip tease and he's like just spark plug dying.
Yeah, because
like,
it's hooked
like,
up to
yeah, something. Baby.
Because we hear his voice and there's a camcorder where I guess that's his eyes.
Yeah, I mean I can't imitate Paul Walker, so I'll just use like the sea hag voice that I love doing. I'm just being like he's like I wish I had a body, you know.
It's like so weird.
It's so weird. And she talks about like skiers that were frozen. Where
yeah.
She's
oh,
like,
there's some dead skiers. I might check out. You know. I might
yeah.
Scale them
yeah.
Out
she's still looking for a human body.
Yeah. So this is how she like celebrates her plans to steal some bodies. She's like, "Let's get drunk, and I'm gonna do a striptease," and like that's how it ends.
So as I said before, this is a very dark movie.
Yeah. Can you imagine like if other movies ended the way this movie did?
I wish.
Right? Yeah.
I honestly, like, there's not much to really say about this. No. And again, I don't like going scene by scene because it usually takes too long, but that's, we kind of went scene by scene there.
Yeah.
I mean, we might have skipped things here or there. Was there anything else about the film or the fashion that you wanted to mention?
The costume designer, I was just looking at it on IMDb. She was also a costume designer on Office Space.
That's cool.
Ooh. Classic 1999 movie starring Jennifer Aniston and only Jennifer Aniston. also Where the Heart Is, which was a Natalie Portman and one of the Judds.
Ashley
Judd, yeah. She also worked in the costume departments on Little Children.
So she had a career, and if anyone has
time.
A career after this,
Dogs,
it's like,
yeah.
That's a big deal. So what's her name? Let's give her a shout out.
Her name, shout out Melinda Eshelman.
Yeah, Melinda.
One of the best and most memorable things about this film. Thank you, Melinda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truly contributed so much. And I just hope that, you know, this movie can pick up somewhere, like if there's like a drag review that wants to do this, you
ooh,
know.
I would watch that.
I would watch that. Oh my God. That would be amazing.
I think it'd make a great musical.
Ooh.
I do too. Yeah. I mean, the soundtrack like just veered so wildly. I loved it.
Kara, I wonder what Jordan would say about possibly converting this into some kind
circus
of circus
show.
Yeah, circus
hell
show.
Yeah. There's this Kesha song that I was thinking about before I watched this that I was hoping that this movie was going to be like. And it's just a sweet little song off of her most recent album about dating Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. I love that song. Ugh.
I feel like they could use that as a jumping off point. Hire Kesha.
They could.
That's what Kesha should have done as her video.
Damn. I will say I don't want them to reboot this because, like, it's just perfect as it is, where I'm like, it's the best way to introduce Paul Walker and Denise Richards into the world, being like, here they are, world. Here
well,
you
last
go.
Week, well, last week we did Hairspray on this podcast, and there was a Hairspray live. Would you take a Tammy and the T-Rex live?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That'd
absolutely.
Be fun. I'm sure it's done in, like, L.A. and Brooklyn, but This is a kind of movie too that like they should like improv teams should do like live readings of and stuff.
Yeah, I'm honestly a little surprised that like it's not more of a thing where I'm like,
I'm sure someone's done it, but
yeah,
do it again.
Yeah, because I mean, it doesn't. I will say it doesn't have as many quotable moments as The Room, where like,
I mean, the script isn't super strong.
Yeah,
dialogue isn't great, but it could be.
It could be, but yeah, I mean,
and there's a lot of action shots too that I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's very like conceptual, you know.
One way to put it.
Okay, so I gave you this question early on, but if you didn't research it, that's okay. We can hash this out now. Some people have spirit animals.
Oh, I did research this. I spent a really long time this afternoon looking at different dinosaurs.
Okay, Kara, then you can go first. What is your spirit dinosaur?
Well, I had a hard time picking one out. I got really distracted by the Archaeopteryx, which is like the missing link between dinosaurs.
Oh, that's the one with the feathers that can fly, right?
Yeah. So I got kind of distracted off in that wing of evolution, but I think, and this is a pretty boring answer, but I think I'm in Apatosaurus, which most people of our generation and the generations before us might know as a Brontosaurus.
Yeah, Brontosaurus.
When they first were like discovering them, the first one that they found, they called an Apatosaurus, and then the second one that they found, they called it a Brontosaurus, and that name caught on, but the scientific convention is to use the oldest name, and that's why they recently officially changed it back to Apatosaurus.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Apatosaurus means, but I know that Brontosaurus means thunder lizard, so that's pretty cool.
Apatosaurus means deceptive lizard.
Oh, that's cool too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some other fun, quick Apatosaurus facts. This dinosaur was an herbivore, and I'm not a full vegetarian, but I eat a mostly plant-based diet, so I connected on that level.
Mm-hmm.
It could crack its tail at over 200 decibels, like so it could crack it like a whip. Lots of my joints make lots of weird loud sounds. So also connected on that level. I love Deceptive Lizard. That's a great name.
Yep.
My album will be out next fall.
Yes!
And this last thing is what really clinched it for me. Likely, it was impossible for it to raise its head.
Hmm.
And it had to lay down a lot.
Nice.
Wait, really?
That's...
Yeah. So most artist renderings of them are like a giraffe. But because of the way that their skeletons fit together and just how big they were probably spent most of their time like completely horizontal, you know, like just all stretched out.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. I dig it.
That's very interesting. So did it eat like ground plants?
And also like trees and shit because it's very tall.
Oh, true. Mm. That's a good point. It just didn't do. Oh, that's...
Yeah, it's just lazy. I like it. I like it.
Educational podcast.
Wait,
here.
Yes. It was about 90 feet long and 15 feet tall at the hips and weighed approximately 38 tons.
Awesome. Okay, Jenny, what is your spirit dinosaur?
All right. I thought about it too, but I didn't do as much research as that. Because originally I'm like, oh, do I want to be like that little lizard in the first Jurassic Park that just like poisons the fuck out of Newman's face and is like, ha-ha! Where I'm like...
Yeah, that one's my favorite.
I love that one. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I feel like I would be a velociraptor because I'm a very clever girl. You know, I don't like kids, like, you know, don't care for them. And just like, I mean, I know that like in actuality, they're more like small birds that are just like vicious and like, you know, they aren't as like gigantic and as cool as Jurassic Park made them out to be. But like, I still feel like a feathery raptor is pretty cool, you know? Like, I like them.
It will definitely kill you.
Yeah, it will definitely. It will look fabulous and kill you. Like, I love feathers. So I'm like, all right, this works. And I mean, I don't know if I'd, like, follow Chris Pratt into battle, so I just have to clarify that, like, I'm, like, the OG Raptors of the first Jurassic Park, being like, nah, I'm a fuck you up, son, except for Jeff Goldblum and Laura
Dern.
They also
make an appearance in the second and third Jurassic Parks.
They do, yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. In the third Jurassic Park, I watched it for third time's a charm.
Oh, the airplane? Or is that the fourth one?
The airplane, I think, is the third one. But Dr. Grant actually, like, makes these, like, 3D printed velociraptor sinus chambers. And then he uses that to, like, distract.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I could also just see myself, like, messing with Alan, being like, Alan, on a plane as a raptor. So I'm like, I got this. Original Oof. Jurassic Park raptor is my spirit dinosaur.
Cool. Okay, so I didn't do any research, really. I just looked up a listicle and picked one. But I picked one called the Concavenator.
Ooh, that's a cool name.
It was a weird dinosaur name.
Kind of sounds like a wrestler, but I don't know, like, what they would even be.
They would turn you concave.
Well, I'll read from this description. The Concavenator is a truly weird dinosaur for two reasons. First, this meat eater was equipped with a strange triangular hump in the center of its back, which may have supported a sail of skin or bone, or may have well just been a strange triangular hump. Fine, that seems interesting. Second, the Concavenator's forearms, this is what I liked, were decorated with quill knobs, which likely sprouted colorful feathers during mating season.
That's fun.
Ooh. It just seems like a fun thing to be in with a quill knob, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's the only reason why I picked this dinosaur. But I was more curious what your spirit dinosaurs were. Great answers.
Thank you.
I don't know if this will be a recurring segment on High School Slumber Party, but you never know.
I mean, I feel like it's definitely a good question. Like, I would love to know other, like just, like, celebrities, you know? Like, what's your spirit dinosaur?
Maybe if someone does a dinosaur podcast, like, a dinosaur film podcast.
Yeah.
This, a lot of Jurassic Parks, Theodore Rex.
Right? It's, like, one of those iconic questions, like the Barbara Walters, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? It's like, if you were a dinosaur, what kind of dinosaur would you be? Done. And if you can't answer it and are like, oh, I don't like dinosaurs, you're a monster.
Okay. I ask this question every time. Both of you have been on, so I don't know, come up with something different, but you're in the slumber party today. What sleeping bags are you bringing?
Oh, man. Do you want to go first, Kara, or like?
No, I have to think about it first.
Okay. Well, I feel like since growing up, my dad and my brother were Boy Scouts, so, like, I always had, like, very, like, utilitarian, like, sleeping bags, so they didn't really have a lot of flair. They were good, but, like, I want something with flair, so I'd want to be, like, in a shark sleeping bag, like, one of those, like, shark ones that looks like you're being eaten, or, like, a giant hamburger sleeping bag.
Ooh,
but
that's cool.
You know? I guess, like, shark is kind of like a dinosaur, but also hamburger is pointless and, like, random, so I'm gonna go with a hamburger.
Aren't sharks just as old as dinosaurs?
They are, yeah.
I think
so, but older. I feel like the hamburger for me for this one, just because, like, it's random and doesn't give a fuck, and I'm like, this movie does not give a fuck.
Kara, have you thought of a good sleeping bag answer?
I have. One of the dinosaurs that I came across today, called Ankylosaurus, has these, like, armor things on their back. Yeah. So I was thinking, like, an armored sleeping bag would be cool.
It would
be like one of those weighted blankets.
Oh,
oh yeah.
That's interesting.
Chill you out. And
I
have
like
maybe
that.
Some spikes down by the feet.
Yeah. That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, no one yet has talked about, like, a weighted sleeping bag. So I like bringing that element to the slumber party.
Yeah, it
Good
sounds
answers.
Soothing. Like, I really want a weighted dinosaur sleeping bag now.
All right. Let's rate this glorious thing. First, on what do you want rated on? What's our scale today from this
film? Should it be yellow roses? Because they popped out a lot.
I personally I personally believe that this film defies rating.
It does. True.
Well, it's a segment. I can't defy it. I agree, but...
But yeah, yellow roses work. I believe in the Victorian language of flowers, yellow roses were roses of friendship.
They are, yeah.
The yellow rose of Texas. Wait, I don't want to endorse that because I think that's also a Confederate
song. I mean,
song.
I was also going to bring it that, like, I like that you reference, like, actual, like, Victorian things. And I was about to be like, imagine me and you says. I'm like, yep.
All right. Who wants to go first and rate this glorious one?
Ooh, what do you think, Kara? Do you want to take this? Or, like, I can... Well, you I guess be... I'm... I don't know.
You're the one who brought this into all of our lives.
I did bring this into... Yeah.
Us.
So I really think that, like... What's the scale? It's on, like, a 1 to 5, or...?
Yes, 1 to 5 yellow roses, but again, if you want to do something fancy, whatever.
Okay, so I'm going to say, in honor of Spinal Tap, it gets an 11.
Oh, wow.
What?
Because it turned up the volume, but then we're going to turn the volume back down to, like, a -5, but then maybe turn it back up to, like, I don't know what category it is, so let's just go with, like, it crossed the line of, like, 1 yellow rose into 5, back to 1, and back to 5 again. So I guess I'm just sticking with 5. If you want to follow that rating journey, feel free.
5 out of 5 yellow roses.
An ambiguous 5.
Yep. I don't know how to rate this. Like,
well, that's
it
the
defies
challenge.
It defies category. It defies everything.
Okay, Kara, what do you think?
When I logged this on Letterboxd, I gave it 2 stars, so I'll stick with the 2 yellow roses, which is mostly just for the costumes alone.
Yep.
I found the movie quite dark and disturbing, and not in the way that I usually enjoy. But, you know, I was going to say it tried, but it didn't really.
No, it didn't. It clearly didn't by the director's words.
2 yellow roses for the costume designer and fuck everybody else.
Oh, man. This is tough because, like, if I give this a 1, I don't want to put it in the level of certain films that I really did not enjoy and was angry about. Like, I'm not angry about this film. But then, like, a 3 is, like, too acceptable, and a 5.
True.
5 on this show is something I rarely give, so I don't know.
Yep, and much like Stuart, I guess, you know, gave that T-Rex middle finger with its opposable thumb to that. Though really... I think you guys are accurate about it being, like, more like a 2 or a 3. Like,
yeah,
if you
I'm
were to look
it
at
2.
It, like, just from, like, a filmmaking perspective and, like, a more traditional look at that scale. But,
I think everyone should see this film once. Just
I do,
to,
too.
Just to either get depressed about your life and be like, wow, why did they give this guy money?
Mm-hmm.
Or be like, wow, anyone can really make a movie.
Yeah. It works on so many scales of just nihilism. It's great.
Yeah, take the optimist approach. That this guy has, like, a full career of making multiple films that are like this. So
I can't. I have been going out of my way to watch a lot of movies made by women, whether they wrote them or they directed them or they wrote and directed them or maybe they just executive produced them. But it's... kind of a completely different experience, and it's so frustrating to me that we don't get to see more movies made by women. So
when
I watch something like this made by a guy who has continued to fail upward, I have a hard time recognizing.
That's where
the depression just sinks back in and is like, how about that straight white male privilege though? And you're like, oh, right.
That said, I was going to say the star of the movie, but the movie's not really about Tammy.
It's called Tammy and the T-Rex.
I know, but a lot of movies that seem like they're about a woman are actually just about what happens to her.
True.
Which is kind of what this is about. But she is the lead, and her sidekick is a black gay man, and that's cool.
Yeah,
but everything else is terrible. So
yeah.
There's something to be said for that in 1994.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I mean, but that being said, so Clueless was made in 1995, a year after this. And in that movie, you have the character of Christian, who is gay. I don't know if he ever, like, really comes out, but, like, his friends wind up knowing that he's gay, and it's fine, and no one makes a big deal about it. Whereas in this, there was a lot of homophobia, not always, like, directed directly at Byron, but, like, a lot of, like, homophobic comments. So it's not like it, like, went, you know, without that.
Yeah, I appreciated that at least, like, Byron wasn't, like, directly, you know, like, oh my god, it's the gay, like, ew, gross, like, gay. Where I feel like I just blanked on the actor's name. I'm sorry. But he isn't acting anyway because his heart died, which I'm sorry about that, too. Oh, I felt like he did, like, the best that he could with that role, where it was, like...
I think he's the best one in this movie.
He is definitely, like, the best actor in this movie, where Theo it was, like, you, Forsett. Theo. I'm sorry, Theo. But, yeah. So it's, like, that's good, at least, that, like, Theo wasn't being homophobic in his portrayal. Like, they weren't directly being homophobic towards him. But, yeah, there were definitely, like, a lot of, like, background, like, whispers of homophobia, where
oh, yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
But yeah,
but still watch Taming the T-Rex, yeah. and make the decision for yourself. It's on YouTube. It doesn't take that much of your time. It might feel like it takes more of your time than it does, but it doesn't take that much of your time. I'm glad though, Kara, that you brought up Clueless, because, well, Kara, what are you up to specifically? Say what you're doing on the awesome Cinemakers podcast here in the Cage Club Podcast Network.
Yeah, I'm co-hosting the newest season of Cinemakers with Joey Lewandowski and Mike Manzi, who have both been on this show and are on many shows on the Cage Club Podcast Network. But on Cinemakers, they have a different guest on every season to talk about the work of a different director. So we are talking about the work of none other than Amy Heckerling, who Ooh. Is like... a totally important director.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And does not get anywhere near the respect and admiration that she should. Very relevant to this podcast. Her first movie was Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is crazy. An incredible, yeah. incredible film. And Absolutely. Really, like, amazing that was, like, right out of the gate. She managed to pull that off. But yeah, so it's out now. So if you subscribe to Cinemakers, you'll get a new episode every Monday. Fast Times and also the episode for Johnny Dangerously are out currently.
Ooh.
And it's been wonderful because Clueless is my favorite movie, which is why I bring it up at every opportunity. And so it's been really fun to, like, go back and watch all of Heckerling's movies, most of which I actually had not seen, and kind of watch her develop as a director and as an artist, and just get to know her better through her work. And it's been really fun. So check that out. And then also I co-host Wistful Thinking with my co-host Jordan, who's also been on this podcast. Brian has been on our show.
We've done a crossover for Grease.
Extra special Grease crossover. But you can find me in all of the things that I do for Cage Club at cageclub.me/Kara with a C.
I was thinking about Amy Heckerling, and I think we were talking about it, or I mentioned it before we recorded, but she's, like, one of the only directors that has probably, like, at least a top 10, two top 10 or two top 25, we'll say, high school films, which
two of the best high school films ever made.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I was trying to put my, like, high school film directors Mount Rushmore. And if you want to hear, by the way, Karen and I talking about John Hughes, you can listen to our Breakfast Club episode here on High School Slumber Party. But John Hughes, for better or worse, is definitely on that Mount Rushmore. But I have to put Amy Heckerling on that Mount Rushmore as well, because Clueless and Fast Times are, again, like, two of universally, by far, the greatest high school films of all time. I can't wait to do them here.
So influential.
Absolutely.
Oh my god, definitely.
Just Spicoli alone, like, gave birth to the entire stoner genre. Basically, like, Bill and Ted was based on Spicoli. Pauly Shore based his character on Spicoli.
It's crazy to think
it
about.
Is.
Even,
it's also
Brecken Meyer, who plays Travis in Clueless, based his portrayal on not just Spicoli, but also Bill and Ted. And so it's just ever-growing lineage.
I know. I am disappointed, though, that Sean Penn is not Spicoli, where that's, like, the one instance where I'm just like, dude, why?
Well, as far as while he was filming Fast Times at Ridgemont High, he would not respond to anything but Spicoli.
Hmm.
And then at the rap party, introduced himself to everyone as if they were meeting for the first time, being like, hi, I'm Sean. He's the worst.
He is the worst. That's why I just wish that he was Spicoli, where I'm like, he was a delight, and you, sir, are not. And I can't even call him sir, because, gross.
But speaking of John Hughes, actually, John Hughes worked for National Lampoon before he made The Breakfast Club, which we talked about, or before he made all of his movies, which we talked about on The Breakfast Club episode. And Amy Heckerling's third directorial effort was actually what are those terrible movies called? National Lampoon, Family Vacation.
Oh, European Vacation?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Which I don't think John Hughes actually wrote the entirety of, but he does have a writing credit on it since he came up with those characters.
Wow, that's an interesting connection.
Yeah. And terrible movie. Don't recommend it.
Mm.
Cinemakers comes out every Monday.
Yep.
That one should be out by the time this one is out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it will be.
European Vacation fans out there, you can have a listen. But Heckerling fans should listen. Or all people should listen.
Yeah, I think all people should, because she's such an influential director, and she's so important.
She is. And it does make my blood boil that Stewart gets money thrown at him for Mac and Me in this. And I'm like, what about Amy?
Yeah, I'm hoping to rekindle an interest in her work among the greater public.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly rather that happen than the Tammy and the T-Rex rekindling.
Yeah.
So Jenny, are you up to anything lately? If not, where can people find you?
Well, let's see. As far as stuff that I'm up to, I mean, as always, trying to spread just the gay agenda and feminism and, you know, destroy the patriarchy. That's what I do on the daily. But otherwise, there's a skincare ad for this cool company called Samuel Ethnobotanics that I'm going to be in, where I'm like, that's cool. It's basically a salve. I'm doing a terrible description, and mainly because I'm just like, I don't want to go into the nitty gritty of it, because their website's, you know, you can check them out, and like, it makes your skin feel real soft, where you're like, cool. So like, doing that, auditioning for stuff, but that's pretty much it. Just trying to survive capitalism and the rest of 2018, being like, every day is forever. Yay.
We don't have much more left 2018.
No, so let's
hope for a better 2019.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of which, can I just put this out into the universe? My day job is ending at the end of December, so if anyone knows of any part-time work-from-home opportunities that are not a pyramid scheme, please get at me.
Okay.
Get Kara a job, guys.
Yes, get Kara a job 2018, 2019.
And no pyramid
Hire
schemes.
Me to make your Tammy and the T-Rex remake.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, like, throw some money at me, too, so I can help art direct, you know, this remake, like, please do. Tammy and the T-Rex right now.
Jenny,
but,
you say where people can follow you?
Oh, yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at jenny.oconnell or at my memes one, Jenny and the Bets XO. So I'm pretty much only on Instagram because Facebook is dead to me. Woo!
All right, anything else you want to say or parting words?
Ooh, I don't know. I feel like Tammy the T-Rex just breaks my brain every time I think about it too long. So I don't.
And preserves Paul Walker.
It does. If you want to see Paul Walker's first role, possibly his greatest role, the introduction to Paul Walker, I just go to YouTube, you know, like,
it is on there, guys.
It's on there. It's a film. It exists. It's exactly what it says. Tammy and the T-Rex. You're not being misled by a title.
Certainly not getting ripped off.
No.
All right, guys, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Woo.
So a big dinosaur size thank you to both Jenny and Kara. What a fun episode. Love talking about spirit dinosaurs. Love talking about Paul Walker's first driving film. What a fun way to celebrate this gloriously, awesomely bad film, Tammy and the T-Rex. And definitely check out Cinemakers. You know I'm a big fan of everything Kara does on the network, but this season is, like, really awesome. I think we're still at, yeah, I think it's just the third episode now. And look, European Vacation, not a great film. But I thought it was a fun episode. And Amy Heckerling, so underappreciated. And I cannot wait till they do Clueless, because obviously, when we do Clueless, it's going to be awesome. But I'm probably going to use this Cinemakers episode as a cheat sheet. And of course, you can find Cinemakers and all the other great Cage Club Podcast Network shows at cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me, or on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes. Which one am I missing? I'm missing one of them. Spotify. All our shows, including this show, is on there. By the way, and I know I say this a lot, write me some reviews, please. Hopefully 5-star reviews. That's really, really, really important in the podcast world. It helps your algorithm, as they say. And, you know, in the high school slumber party classroom, algorithms are super important. Tell a friend. Telling a friend is the best thing you can do. I'm proud of what I do here. I'm happy doing this. So just tell a friend, spread the word, so that more than just you can listen to this podcast. Oh, I didn't forget your homework assignment for next week. I hope you were into rollerblading in the 90s, because we're talking about a film called Airborne.
Let me tell you what styling is. The perfect session. A-frame wave, ground swell, spitting out salt water in your face, doing a 360 without a bounce. I call it the consciousness razor.
Mitchell's life was a California dream. Until he woke up in Cincinnati.
What do you think? It's wild, right?
We're just so excited about having you here. Slow down a little bit, Wiley. Hands on Janet, too.
His cousin wants him to meet his friends.
You, where do I know you from?
You used to flush my head in the urinals.
They're an interesting bunch.
I could be Elvis. It's possible.
I really like to sleep, and I like Nintendo.
They all want Mitchell to feel right at home. And if it wasn't for Nikki...
How are you?
You must be getting pretty homesick, huh?
Not right now.
He'd have no reason to stay.
Man, I'm gonna throw up.
For the next 6 months, his days of sun, sand, and surf have been put on ice.
Oh, see you in school.
In a city where no one understands him.
I need traffic, smog, heat waves.
Who would have thought he'd become a hero by doing what he does best?
He's been challenged by the preps to a little skating race. We thought maybe you'd, you know, want to skate on our team.
No. He has one chance to prove himself. One final race to win. And he's the one who has what it takes to put them over the top. Airborne.
I think I'm starting to like Cincinnati.
And our guest next week is current and former inline skater, not professionally, but was our guest on the D3 episode, my good friend Chris Carroll. That's going to be a fun one, I think. I've never seen Airborne. I think I might watch it after recording this now. You know, gotta do my homework too. The professor's got to do his homework.
Whatever.
Couple other things. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and the Instagram. I'm always active there. I want to chat with you guys. Slide into my DMs. Let's have a conversation about high school films. Obviously, I really like to do that. So don't forget to get John Cusack to unblock us. Send him a message. That'd be nice. Today, I leave you with a song that I think Kara brought up. It's on Kesha's latest album. It's called Godzilla. I haven't heard it, but I'm going to play it now. So I hope it's good. Later, dudes. Oh, and if you're a member of the tribe, happy Hanukkah.
What do you get when you take Godzilla to the mall? Scares all the children and shreds all the pillows and knocks over walls. His emerald eyes, they sparkle and shine as he eats the food court and steals half my fries. That's what you get when you take Godzilla to the mall. What do you get when you take Godzilla to meet your mom? He rings the bell and she looks out the window and calls the cops. I try to explain that he's mostly tame as long as there's pizza and video games. That's what you get when you take Godzilla to meet
mom. You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.